This is Steve Sherlock with another Franklin Matters radio show, number 431 in the series. This shares my conversation with Town Council Chair Tom Mercer. This is one of a series of conversations meant to provide a recap of the prior Town Council meeting, akin to one of the many sports post-game analysis broadcasts we're familiar with in here in New England. This will be a discussion focused on the Town Council meeting. Okay, what just happened? What does it mean for Franklin residents and taxpayers? The show notes include links to the meeting agenda and associated documents. Our conversation runs around 32 minutes. Let's listen in. Steve Sherlock here for Franklin Matters, Franklin Public Radio, WFPR-FM, anywhere on the internet and in the local Franklin area on the radio dial at 102.9. We're here again for a town council quarterbacking session with our town council chair, Tom Mercer. Tom, happy new year.
Happy new year to you, Steve. It's a pleasure to be here once again.
Absolutely. We'll start out 2021. We've had our first meeting. It was relatively short compared to some of the others, and there was a couple of key topics in there.
Yeah, there were. And you know, I knew a couple of them, or at least one of them, I was sure was going to take some lengthy discussion. So I didn't want to put a whole lot on that first agenda.
No, I can appreciate that. And I know you, it seemed like, you know, well, there's none of this, none of that, none of this, none of that. So you just, the opening minutes kind of like just skipped right through into the first meaty topic.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
So if anybody was trying to dial in and listen, and you know, they didn't miss much, but boy, we just got right into it. That's for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
And for those who didn't hear, at least, and hopefully at least were aware via the agenda and other Franklin Matters posting, the first key item up was the hazard mitigation plan, which was something that, at least for the background, for those listening to set us up, was something that was not done overnight. Clearly, there had been a plan, I believe, in 2010, but it had been not updated recently. And I was fortunate to participate in one of the workshops early on with the Bellingham workshop that was mentioned from a communications perspective. Clearly, in that role between Franklin Matters and Franklin Radio, there's a lot of communication aspects around a mitigation plan and execution thereof.
Right.
And I think that's one of the key pieces. So I'll let you elaborate as well around the plan, and the council has approved. So now it will help guide us to go forward.
Exactly. And I think probably the first and one of the more important pieces for the community to understand is this is a hazardous mitigation plan. It is not a hazardous response plan. And there was a little discussion about that last night as well, the differences between. And obviously a response plan would go through through the fire chief, who is our liaison person as far as any hazardous material or any disaster plan goes through. He's our chief officer as far as that goes. And what we got into last night was the discussion of the mitigation plan, which is really basically a plan that involves flooding, hurricanes, brush fires, earthquakes, yeah, extreme
some of the
temperatures,
other natural events.
Just yeah. Natural events. And back in 2000, there was a law put in a place that required all communities to develop and adopt a plan. Mm-hmm. And back in 2000, we did that. And then again in 2010, that plan was updated. You know, the question becomes, what is the correct time frame to look at these updates? And sometimes it might go a little longer. I think, should it be 8 years? Should it be 5 years? Should it be 10? As we looked at it this time, it really and truly, maybe 10 years is the right time frame to look at it, because there was enough change so that we needed to add some items to it. In fact, the first, first seven eight, or eight, it was at eight.
Yeah,
I think the eight. First eight were from the plan, the updated plan in 2010. And, there were a couple of pieces that we added this time around, which is the impacts of climate change and to protect the town's critical water sources. So those two pieces we did add as part of the goals that we continue to work with. We use public education, property protection, and we work very hard to make sure that we're dealing with the issues that are going to affect and what we can do with the infrastructure to deal with the effects of a disaster. Whether it be, I say disaster, a hurricane, the kinds of things that we do see,
right,
occasionally. So,
yeah, and it's interesting too. I think, in terms of the timing, let me start there at least. I think it was good timing to the extent that we did have a new fire chief. It also helped him kind of get up to speed in terms of the lay of the land, as well as because of the workshops, et cetera, get to meet the other people in the areas in the similar planning and coordinations. He may have had opportunity elsewhere, but he certainly through those forums got a chance to meet a whole lot of folks, which is always a good thing to do once you're on the ground. It's better to have started the relationship rather than meeting somebody when you're in the middle of an event. The master plan is also up generally on a 10-year cycle. And I think as this came up before and would theoretically be incorporated within the master plan, I think it's fairly appropriate because I think overall, every 10 years probably is an appropriate time period given the nature of the changes that do need to be made. But then the other piece is since eight of them still need to be addressed to some extent, this at least helps guide the council and frame the discussions around prioritization, budgeting, et cetera, in regards to, okay, if we still need to address flooding, what else can we do? And maybe it's through the stormwater mitigations or whatever else. Clearly, a lot of the rain gardens and things of that sort help recycle the water appropriately into our aquifers, which we need, because then that ties into the triad that Brutus uses because of the stormwater, et cetera, ties into our drinking water, which is, this is key, and we need that. But where we can at least take advantage to, okay, if we can fix this in such a way so that there won't be a drainage issue and thereby putting some ice on some roads or avoiding some flooding in people's basements, et cetera, then let's do so. That's the way to go.
Exactly. And, the catch basin program that our DPW director has is something that we look at continuously. And that's an ever-changing piece. As you clean out these catch basins, if the wind's blowing in one direction, one gets clogged before another. Right. So those are the kinds of things that are ongoing, and they're forever changing because of the lay of the land. And one of the issues that came up last night is whose maps are we using, and where's the data coming from?
Right.
And Brutus explained that we use FEMA as to get most of the data that we use to put this plan into place. And Kobe Frangillo, Councilor Frangillo, jumped in and said, at one point that he had read where FEMA was a little bit behind mm-hmm. in those data numbers. Right. I think that's also an important piece for everyone to know that, yes, we're getting the most up-to-date information available to us, which may not necessarily be the most up-to-date information. Mm-hmm. So we need to continue to stay on top of our legislators to make sure that FEMA is dealing with this. And I know that they are. We've had the discussions with them. Brutus is very good about these state plans and these federal plans. He's very involved. He's one that the state and the feds always reach out to mm-hmm. because he's very knowledgeable about these kinds sure. of things. So I do feel we're in a good position townwide. Because we have the right guy in the position to who is getting the most up-to-date information from the correct sources. So,
and to the extent that it may be off and it's a question perhaps of percent or feet or whatever, it's still a guide in terms of how we need to prioritize. And then as we do our work, clearly that's where the additional planning factors come in. So we still have an opportunity to tweak it when it comes to actually doing the work.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And as you know, along with this, as I alluded to early on, this is the mitigation piece of a hazard, a natural disaster. Mm-hmm. There's also the response plan, and that will be something we will discuss a little further down the road. But we felt that this was a good place to start in trying to get to update the plan and trying to get this kind of information out to the public, up onto the website, mm-hmm. with social media now, these kinds of things people knew absolutely nothing about unless they came to a council meeting in past years, because there wasn't the social media that there currently is. This kind of thing where we're doing a Thursday morning quarterback show, a radio show, where mm-hmm. we just kind of summarize what happened and what was discussed at the council meeting the night before. Yeah. I think as time progresses, I think there will be a percentage of people that will look at this and say, well, I think I'll just wait and listen to the review on Thursday morning because it'll save me a half an hour or an hour or, right. or two.
Right. Or two or three.
Exactly. So yeah. All these things are just really good and important. And I know there's a wealth of information that we'd like to get out to the public. And sometimes I think we're feeding it too fast because it's so much to comprehend.
Yeah.
But you have to start somewhere. And I think that that's what we're trying hard as a council to do, to get as much information out. And then let's deal with the minutia, the inner workings of those plans as the questions come up, but at least let the public know that there are these plans out there and we are aware and we are prepared. And that's probably the most important word that I can use is we are prepared for mm-hmm. these situations.
Yeah. And certainly the report, while it may sound hazardous mitigation plan, it's going to be this, you know, major tome, and I think it is 50 something pages, but having read through it, it's fairly easy reading. And in my own reading, that was like, really? There's some interesting details in here. And to highlight a couple of those, you know, one of the most, it staggered me. 25% of the population in Franklin lives alone. And then 50% of that is the senior population. I'm not sure how people would have really known that other than finding it in a report, because you certainly drive around, you know, you see apartment buildings, you see houses, but how would you know that 25% of us live alone? And of that, 50% are seniors.
Yeah.
You know, so the messages that do come out, you know, to check in on your neighbor, that is important. There are a lot of them that need checking on.
Exactly. Especially during this time, during this pandemic, when there's so much going on, just a simple reach out to a neighbor, a simple reach out to a friend or a colleague. Hey, how are you? How's things going? These are great things for, and I think there's a lot of our community that already does this, but a reminder to continue to do this. Correct. And these are the things that are needed. Now, I know you've read through a lot, and a lot of this data is out there, as we've discussed offline, the wetland piece, the 10% of our area is wet. And you think about it and you say, well, how is 10% of the town of Franklin considered wetlands? When you think through the things that are involved in what is wetland,
it's not just a stream that walks through there. It's kind of the ground leading to it, because in many cases, that's kind of the swampy stuff, and that's wetland.
Exactly. So,
yeah. And
all good information.
Yeah, indeed. And to the extent that there's multiple topics, particularly whether community preservation and open space or housing within that, I mean, there's data in there that can foster appropriate database discussions going forward for sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah. The second other key piece certainly was the Beaver Street Interceptor. And for those, that's the major sewer connection for, what, two-thirds of Franklin's sewer that goes into the sewer treatment facility. There had been, and we'll put links in the notes, as there were links in the town council agenda to the prior presentations. There was a significant discussion at the town council meeting. FinCom had a presentation. And now Jamie and appropriate parties from the administration came back with the authorization, which the town did approve last night. So that's a good thing, I believe, for us going forward.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And this is something that's been on the table for a long time. We've been discussing this issue for the entire time that I've been on the council.
I think it's all the time that I've been doing reporting as well.
And, you know, what we're dealing with here is a section, the main section of pipe, of sewer pipe, that, as you said, takes in two-thirds of the sewer runs that comes through Franklin, runs through this interceptor. And it's 109 years old.
And not getting any younger.
And it's a accident. We talked about a disaster in earlier discussion. This would be exactly what we refer to as a hazard, and we would have to mitigate this particular issue if that pipe failed somewhere, and you know it's going to. And we looked at, we've had many discussions over the years as to different approaches. Can you sleeve it? Can you put a Band-Aid on it?
Right.
And that's not the way to deal with this. This pipe, this interceptor needs to be replaced. And we are all aware of that. And I think a lot of the discussion last night was around, what if it failed? And what would happen? And the answer to the question is, it would be a disaster from the standpoint financially it would be for the town, as you look, businesses would have to close. You couldn't flush your toilets, all of this thing. While you were putting in a temporary fix, and a temporary fix while you replaced it at that point would be twice the cost of the replacement. Mm-hmm. So we needed to get ahead of it. And this is how we get ahead of it. We start the process. It's a 5-year process. And over the next 9 months, we will be putting together a plan. We'll be putting together the funding of it. And
the engineering design.
The engineering design. All of these things. And you're looking probably at 2.5 years worth of construction, 2.5 to 3, depending upon what you run into. Mm-hmm. But this is an integral part of our infrastructure. And if there is one piece that you would have to identify as the main piece of our infrastructure, this is what we're talking about, mm-hmm. right here.
Right.
And to get ahead of it, and we know it needs to be replaced. It's 109 years old. And this is the right time. Rates are low, interest rates are mm-hmm. low. We're in good shape financially. You know, we're AA bonded
right.
community. You just don't get any better. So
no, go into the spot market in an emergency, you'd have to pay a higher interest rate. Now with proper planning, we can get the lowest possible interest rate.
Exactly. And the project, we're looking at this project, and it's a $25 million project. If it failed, our cost would be $25 million, but it would probably be another $30 or $40 million to get a temporary fix up and functioning so that businesses could open their door.
Mm-hmm. Or then we'd still have to consider what the damage was and how to clean it up, depending upon where it broke.
Exactly.
And who knows how much exactly. that would be.
And where would it go? And
yeah.
that cleanup could cost the town millions, 100 million, pick a yeah. number. You just don't know. So what is the smart thing to do? The smart thing to do is to get out ahead of them. And that's what this council chose to do last night. As I said, we've been talking about this for a dozen years, mm-hmm. different councils. And now is the right time. And I applaud the council's efforts last night in making the decision to move forward with this project.
Yeah, and there's still some uncertainty in terms of the cost, only in terms of the rate. We know the cost, the $25 million, and it may be a little bit more or less depending upon the final engineering docs, but it's within the ballpark. But
right.
it
right.
won't be a tax rate increase.
That's and correct.
I think, Jamie, as of 2022 or something in that area, it may be or would be a sewer rate increase.
Right. We're not looking, when we don't feel we're going to need to increase the sewer rates in 21, 22. 23, yes, there's going to be need for a sewer rate increase. And you just touched on it, but I think it's important for people to understand that this $25 million is not going to be paid for as part of your real estate tax.
Mm-hmm.
It does not affect your real estate tax at all. It comes from your sewer and water rates. That's where these dollars will come from to pay for this project.
And effectively, it'll be if you will, kind of a fairer way to do it, because effectively the sewer rates are based upon your water usage. And if you're using more water, you're going to pay more because you're using more sewer. And thereby, of that 2/3 that fully go through there, it's shared that way as opposed to a flat fee across everybody.
Exactly. The users are actually the ones that are incurring the costs mm-hmm. associated with dealing with this project, and as it should be.
And even if people, I think from the conversations last night and prior, even if people have their own wells to get their water, they still have a prorated amount for the sewer. So that prorated amount would still be applicable. So they still get to pay even though they don't have water. Yeah,
exactly. Exactly. So,
yeah. So it's the fairest way. But I think now, certainly it's been talked of 10 years. Let's do it. Let's get exactly. it started. It'll still take, you know, the 18 months or so to get all the final engineering docs, et cetera, the funding approved, this grant opportunities within the state, our state funding assistance available. So all that paperwork needs to go through.
Sure. And every step we take now, starting with the one we took last night, puts us that much ahead of any issue that mm-hmm. might happen going right. forward.
Indeed. So more to come on that as it goes, the plan is in place.
Yes, it is.
And it is starting. So that's a good part. We still need to keep our fingers crossed that nothing happens until we're done.
Exactly. You know, this is what I'm going to look like for the next 5 years till it's done.
Yeah, cross. Well, thank you for taking the time to do this recap, quarterbacking session.
Just briefly, I wanted to touch base on our vaccine plan, which Jamie gave us an update last night. So basically, what we have is Franklin High School has been designated, the gym at Franklin High School has been designated as a center point of our vaccine
distribution
for not only Franklin, but there are five communities, and it's Medway, Millis, Milford, Bellingham, and Franklin.
Right.
And we're now halfway through phase one. There's like six groups within phase one, and then there's phase two, there's five or six groups there, phase three, and so on. We are now partway through, we're in part three, I think, or group three of phase one, which is first responders, and our vaccine is being delivered on Monday for our first responders in our neighboring and our five communities that we're dealing with. And we're set up and to start giving our first responders the vaccine on Wednesday morning. So between the next 2 weeks, all of the first responders in our five communities will be given, those wanting and accepting the vaccine will be given the first dose. And then a week or two later, they get the second dose.
Right. Yep. Based on the follow on.
Yeah, exactly. And this is a work in progress, because I assure you, the changes, I speak with Jamie two or three times a day, and the last 5 days, it's the DPH has been 100% vaccine. They're not talking about governor's orders or anything else. They're talking about the vaccine and the distribution of the vaccine, how it's going to be distributed, who's going to distribute it. Mm-hmm. We did have refrigerators that have been brought into the high school where the vaccine will be kept and to deal with the refrigeration of it that we all know is a very important piece.
Yeah, for at least these first couple.
Yep. Right. And these next couple of weeks with the first responders are will give us the opportunity to do a trial run before we get into the larger groups in the beginning of phase two, which is the over 75, people with two underlying conditions. It's all laid out and how this is actually going to be done will be dictated by the Department of Public Health, and there are changes being made every day. So it wouldn't be right of me to give any further information beyond what we know in the next 2 weeks, which is first responders. But it's here, the vaccine is here, and we're moving forward. And we're trying to fight our way out of this pandemic, and I truly see light at the end of the tunnel here. And that's wonderful for the entire country.
Council quarterbacking session, and clearly that was also discussed last night. I was participating and did record the Board of Health meeting earlier. So I'll have that audio to share where they get into a little bit more detail as they continue to work out the details, as you indicated. Yeah, the playing field or the rules were changing almost daily, if not multiple times within the day.
And exactly.
Kathleen Liberty and company, I think it's Lieutenant Roy also participated in the call. She's heavily involved from a distribution point. So the board's on it. The Department of Health is on it, and we'll be in good stead going forward.
It's an enormous project. And I give the Board of Health, Kathleen Liberty, this is coordinating. This is a huge task. They're doing a great job. The fire chief is right on top of this as well. So I just look forward to really good things. And I think in my last message at the end of 2020 in December, I made the statement that I think, you know, let's all look forward to a vaccine filled 2021. Yes. Well, it's here and it's starting. Coming. Yeah, it's starting. So this is all good stuff.
It is good stuff. And we'll be patient until it happens, but we'll continue to share info as it happens.
And exactly.
That's what we need to do.
Great.
Again, thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Steve. It's always a pleasure. I look forward to these quarterbacking sessions now that we have them started. It took us a while to get them going, but I think it's a good thing.
No time like the present.
Yeah.
We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. And by the way, you can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.